Hello, I'm Wendy Liebman. I'm the CEO and chief shopper at WSL Strategic Retail, and this is Future Shop. If there's ever been a time that we need to think about the future and shopping, it is now. And that's what we're going to do in a few minutes. But first, for all of those of you listening, I hope you're well. I hope your families are well. I hope you're fortunate enough to be working. If you're not, my heart goes out to you, as does that of all our team. It is a challenging time. What I know is in the best of circumstances, you are juggling life and school and families at home and feeding and cooking and washing and all of those things. So it is not an easy time. So that makes it even better for us to be sort of distracting ourselves for a minute and try to make sense of some of this. And that's what we're going to do over the next half hour or so. You know, if there's ever been a time that we need to think about the future and its impact on retail and shopping, this is it. Here we are in the midst of a global health pandemic, a global financial pandemic. We're about to come out of sort of that coma of tamping down and shutting down economies to open up gradually. We're doing it little by little in states. And this is very uncharted territory, very uncharted territory. There's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of data. There are webinars galore. We've been responsible for several of them. There's a lot of content. But I have to tell you, I think what's missing here is the realization that it's not about the answers. It's actually about what questions do we have to ask ourselves as we move into and through this new life, world, business, health crisis that we are living through every day today. It's not about the answers. It's about creating a framework. It's about thinking about the questions we need to ask. And it's about thinking, how do we lead through all this? How do we come out of it at the other end, and what does that end look like? So I am really thrilled today. I have absolutely the right person here today to ponder these questions with me. Helena Folks is not only a dear friend, but has the experience we need to help us think about all of this. No pressure, Helena. Let me do the drum roll first and give people your background, those who don't know you. Helena was most recently the CEO and board member of the Hudson's Bay Company, a luxury retail company based out of Canada, owner of Saks Fifth Avenue, Hudson's Bay in Canada, Saks off Fifth, a global business that she spent several years transforming to the point where they were able to take this business from a public company to a private company just recently. She remains on the board of the Home Depot. And when I first met Helena many years ago, when we were young and charming, and still are, of course, when I first met Helena, she was at CVS Health, then called CVS Drugstores Pharmacy. And in her most recent gig there, she was president of CVS Pharmacy, which was the 8,000 or so physical stores and dot-com stores that is CVS. Helena has an extraordinary experience when you think about the channels, the retailers she's worked in, the categories she's worked in, and her passion for both all aspects of retail with a very customer-centric lens, which is where she and I converge, customer shopper. So after that long introduction, hello.
Hello, Wendy. It's so good to be with you. I'm sorry I'm not physically with you. The last time we were together was a few months ago now, but this is brightening my day to see you and be with everyone.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. I really feel quite weepy, I must say, because I remember we had breakfast downstairs in Brookfield Place and, the world was quite different and we were talking about health symposiums and all those amazing things. And so anyway, this too shall emerge. I found myself weepy on lots of occasions lately. So this will be an inspiring one, I know. So my question to you, how are you? How are your family? How's Rhode Island?
Oh, thank you. I'm good. We're all safe and sound. And As you said, I left Hudson's Bay in early March because we went private and the plan had been for me to move on. So it's really strange for me, I have to say, because I have never not worked. And in many ways, it's a gift, obviously, to be able to be with my family. But we're all hunkered down with three of my four grown children and a boyfriend, getting to know each other really well and having good days and bad days like everyone. You know, and it's okay to really, even though I feel very fortunate, to know that and acknowledge that there are some really hard days for everyone. Especially as you said earlier, I have an enormous amount of empathy for people who have lost their jobs and have a responsibility for their families. So I think about that a lot, and I'm reminded of, you know, the fact that we do have this spirit of togetherness, despite how painful it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the grounding force as we move through this. So that keeps us centered, I think. So just, you know, to sort of step back before we step forward, you know, what's your sense of things now as we're in this kind of the third month of being locked down and as the world opens a little bit here and there? What's just your overarching sense of things with retail especially?
Yeah, well, I mean, I it's funny. I come at it with lots of different lenses, as you do too. I come at it from the lens of being a shopper myself, and I'm now even more responsible for my family's health and welfare since I'm home. I come at it from the lens of being on the board of Home Depot, being on groups. I just was part of the Business Council yesterday, which is a group of CEOs observing what's going on in their businesses. And I would say that, you know, the hardest thing for all of us is this uncertainty, because we go through other crises and we at least know what the deadline is, and this we don't. But I will say, I think that there is also this positive spirit that I'm hearing from a lot of people, whether it's CEOs saying, gosh, my organization's never moved faster or been so together. Or those of us who are shopping, feeling this enormous sense of gratitude for people on the front line who are actually working and serving us in the grocery stores and drug stores and home improvement stores. But I mean, who would have ever thought that safety is now our first concern? So the world is so upside down.
It's so interesting you say that. Two things strike me in that. In our How America Shops research last December, we saw about 73% of the national population saying they were engaged in some form of living well. And by that, I mean, you know, healthy pursuits, doing things to take care of their health, their family's health. That was mental, physical, financial, all of that. And then in our most recent How America Shops work, 85% of the national population said they were afraid of catching the virus. So wow. Within that period of five months, you realized the sort of frisson, if that's the word, of the light switch on or off that said, oh, my heavens. And the other thing that was so fascinating was that reminds me when you said that about, you know, how amazing people are. In this most recent work, 52, I don't mean throwing numbers at you, but it's just stuck in my head. You know, that one data point that makes you go, huh. 52% of people said they are proud of how they are managing the crisis. Mm. And you go like, oh, my heavens.
Yeah.
This is amazing. You know, that this is who we are, right?
Yeah.
In these times. So it sort of reflects some of what you were just saying.
I think it's also an important leadership quality, and I've been impressed by so many leaders. It's the reminder of what we're grateful for as leaders of organizations, that we have people with such tenacity.
Yeah. It is interesting you talk about that, because thinking about how we establish kind of a lens for the future, you know, what are the questions we should ask here? You know, you were always so engaged in, I remember, with Extra Care and the sort of customer centricity, but even when you moved to Hudson's Bay Company, all the CRM work you were doing, how do you get people to be sort of customer focused? Yeah. So how do you, your learnings and experience, how do you think about that at this moment in time when we're all trying to make sense of things?
Well, I mean, look, a lot of it is the same as it always was in terms of what I always loved about all that work and still do is it requires us to combine our huge sense of empathy and listening with data. And that's what you're so good at, Wendy. But it's marrying both sides and not being held hostage to either one. But I think the thing that has struck me that really has changed so much in the last 2 months that we need to tap into more than ever is the power of trust. Because we're living in a world where we don't feel safe. We're not trusting our federal government. We're worried about who do we listen to. And I think that businesses in particular have this massive opportunity to build that trust in this moment of hardship. And to me, that's the ultimate way you have a relationship with consumers in the long run. And so forget all the targeting and the data. You know, I think the first question customers have is it a company that's taking care of its workers? A, because they want companies to have a heart, but B, because that actually helps them feel safe. And so there are lots of ways that we build trust as organizations, and I'm really impressed by what many companies are doing to put their employees first. I mean, we hear about all the bad things on news at night. There are a lot of great examples of companies really going the extra mile to make sure their employees feel as safe as possible. And I think that pays massive dividends over the next couple of years.
Can you share any of those examples of things you've just been observing as shopper mother, not CEO or CEO board member?
Yeah, both. I mean, as a board member and observer of companies, I look at Home Depot, Target, Starbucks, CVS, great examples of organizations that are adding benefits. And they're not perfect. No one's perfect. But they're really thinking about how do we, for example, give even more paid time off for everyone, but in particular for our employees who are over the age of 65. Mm-hmm. How do we give people more pay for showing up? Because these people's lives are upside down. How do we give them a sense of safety? And it's a little off-putting as a customer, you know, to go into CVS and now have a plastic plexiglass in front of me. But I salute the company because I want those employees to feel safe. I think that there's more work to be done, but as I And no one likes to brag about what they're doing for the sake of doing that. But I think that we often think that businesses are only selfish organizations. And I'm seeing a lot of very generous things that are happening that consumers really will appreciate the more they know.
It's interesting you say that because in 2018, I think it was, we began to do what we called our caring scores, our caring index. And it was around sort of well-being and health and well-being, but it had sort of broader context. And the thing that was most disturbing at that time, and we tracked about, I don't know, 20 retailers on a variety of attributes, which you could say, you know, influenced it right or wrong, but rightly or wrongly. But of all of them, only two retailers got above the 50 percentile in terms of the place I believe as a shopper they cared about me. And the caring was everything from, you know, making it easy to shop, the employees, you know, value, information, less stress, all of those sorts of things. And the two, interestingly, were Costco and Aldi, you know. Wow. And the drugstores, the grocery stores, the big boxes, especially all sort of were down. And so as we move through this and you talk about trust and caring, certainly the opportunity for growth, but I think you're absolutely right. You know, who do we trust? And that notion, you and I've talked about this, in times of chaos, you know, shoppers want to take control of what they can. And it's often the little things and they evaluate everybody. So what you were saying there was, I think, so powerful in terms of that whole sense of how do we move forward here? That's a different kind of metric. You know, that term loyalty maybe is irrelevant now. What does loyalty mean today, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we're going to rethink the terms. But that's somewhat depressing that there were only two. But I will say, I think that, you know, developing that sense starts with employees on the front line feeling cared for.
Yeah.
And when they feel cared for, they can share that care.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think that's what we're starting to see. And I hope that sticks.
Yeah. I think that's really powerful. You know, it is interesting that, you know, thinking about this, you know, when we talk about transformation, so trust and caring, safety, things that we never really, you know, thought about in a commercial sense, right? So when you think about transformation, I mean, you were on the front lines of transforming CVS to be able to say CVS Health, and with the exit from tobacco and then the move into other healthier things. And at Hudson's Bay Company, when you began to transform the organization there, you know, what are the things we have to think about there? Safety, caring. Are there other principles that we can build out as kind of a framework here?
Yeah, I think one of the things that is really fascinating that we're all feeling is the notion that technology is becoming infinitely more important in our lives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the question is this just a moment in time or does it stick? You asked about it's more important to think about what the questions are. And I think that's a really interesting question. I don't know the answer in full. But I am struck by watching my 82-year-old father be part of Zoom and figuring it out home alone and all of us doing things we never thought we would do before. So I think that tech rising is an interesting trend. I also think, as I said before, that there's this issue of, you know, the government failing us. Another thing that I think is going on is this interesting question of populism, and especially as it relates to healthcare. You know, in a world where today we learned 15% of Americans are now unemployed, how do we think about where healthcare bills do happen and what's going to happen in the next 12 to 18 months as people can't afford all those healthcare bills that they'll have? So all of those things worry me, but you know, there are a lot of great things too. So if I look at transformation, back to your question, I'm struck by companies that are saying to me, I just rolled out a new innovation in 2 weeks that mm-hmm. normally would have taken 18 months. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that from several retailers. You know, one of them is the Home Depot, whose board I'm on. And there's a real sense of pride in that, but that is the ultimate in customer satisfaction to do something in the moment in such an agile fashion. That will really stick, I think, you know, and it may look different 6 to 12 months from now. But I think that notion of being able to move quickly, being agile, what I hear a lot from CEOs is, gosh, I used to have a very long list of investment opportunities, and this crisis has made us singly focused on the things that really, really matter to the customer. So I think, you know, we're learning those things along the way about transformation.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was listening to one of the many webinars that are around these days, but there was a wonderful quote that somebody said. I give him a nod, Dan O'Connor. He said, "Don't reopen the way you shut down." And so I now have that written, since I don't have a whiteboard in an office. I have it written on a white piece of paper stuck on a bookcase upstairs. And I think about that a lot, which sort of says, think about everything you were doing and assess it or reassess it. Don't assume. And you know, I'm one of those people, and I'm very biased that, and you know this, maybe not my bias, but my bias to shoppers. So I always try to figure out what's sort of a true north. And I, you know, I've often said that follow the shopper to see the future. And so just what you said, how do I think about what I need to think about through the lens of how people are living their lives and choose to live their lives? And the agility and response is so powerful.
Yeah, no, it is. It's really impressive. And that's what I'm reminding myself, because it is easy to feel down, but there are these incredible stories out there of people innovating on behalf of the customer. Now, the thing that I worry about, and everyone I would assume can see this coming, is that there will be real winners and losers. So the strong are going to get stronger. And I think that maybe we were destined for some sort of shakeout, but it will be harder and faster than any of us would have hoped for. And so that feels very real. But I agree with you. I don't think any of us imagines ever shopping the same way again. Yeah. And, you know, I was just having a conversation about apparel and a category where women who are mostly the shoppers love to touch and feel. And how do apparel retailers come back? Yes, they'll innovate around things like curbside delivery, but what elements have to change to bring back that sense of safety and
security? Yeah. And I heard that in somebody talking to me about browsing for beauty, you know, browsing in the beauty aisle. Will people, one, feel comfortable? Will they want to spend time there at all? People have asked about, will people race back out to get their hair colored, you know? Oh, dear heavens. You know, I had to laugh, excuse my black humor, but that we have to have black humor right at the moment. That notion of, oh, are we going to die? Oh, and what about our roots? But those things, you're right. Do people still want to, what is the emotional experience that people want? And then how do I deliver it in a way that's relevant for the time? I think is what you're saying as well. Yeah. I know you're bold. Are you bold enough to tell us who you think will, or what industries you think will not make it?
Oh, I think that, you know, I just think there's going to be within retail. I mean, you already see bankruptcies happening. Mm-hmm. Neiman Marcus mm-hmm. announced their bankruptcy. So I look at that category, which I was obviously very familiar with as Saks part of my portfolio. And I say to myself, really, at the end of the day, just having one luxury department store feels right to me. Mm-hmm. From a shopper perspective, from the dynamics with suppliers. So I think you're going to see that happen in the luxury business. I think there were a lot of retailers out there who were struggling. And, you know, the question is, will they have the financial resources to come back? Does a J. Crew come back? I don't know.
Right.
I think, you know, being in a mall does not feel like a great place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that is a real concern for me as we think about all the retail that happens in malls all across America.
Yeah. What's your sense of healthcare retail? I mean, on the one hand, it's the spot, right? It's like grocery. Somebody said to me this morning about how do, you know, will a drugstore be actually a sick store and all of those things up front finally go somewhere else? Or will it be the well store that you and I have talked about a lot? What's your sense of the drugstore industry?
Well, I still feel very optimistic that consumers, and this will be accentuated, I think, right now, consumers taking control of their healthcare will continue to be a really important dynamic. You know, we're all, for example, not necessarily trusting people as we listen to what's the right move for me to make right now from social distancing and all the things that I should be doing. But I do think that retailers who focus on healthcare have a huge opportunity because they're trusted partners in the community. I trust my pharmacist. I trust other people who are in my local community. And so I think to the extent that those companies have built trust during this, that will help them in the future. But I also think that new forms of technology will emerge that allow us as consumers to be more in control of our healthcare. And that's exciting. You know, so the idea that, you know, that I need a COVID test at home is not something I even thought about 3 months ago. I didn't know what it was. So what are all the things that we'll start doing? And as I've had more time during this break too, just to think about, you know, biometrics, sleep, food, wellness, I just think that we're much more, we're certainly in survival mode, but when we have moments, we're thinking a lot about all of the things, mental health, that are going into our whole health. And so I think that's a very exciting place to be in terms of retail healthcare.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that too, because as you and I had talked before, this notion, this move, we called it a sort of social movement or a lifestyle movement towards a greater sense of health and well-being, which we actually saw come out of the end of the last recession when people were trying to we called it sort of a little crassly buying happiness. We're thinking about financial, you know, solidity and taking stress out of lives and a greater sense of well-being for their families and communities and even the world. And so that was already ingrained, that 73% I mentioned in the beginning, that was already there. And it feels like, to your point, this has just ramped all of that up so that now we are going to be actively trying to do better for ourselves, because to your point, we don't necessarily know who to trust in this world, which is really interesting, I think.
It is. And I think how people define healthcare is evolving and interesting. Mm. One of the things that I always was struck by in our research at CVS was how much women had a broader definition of healthcare. They mm-hmm. saw beauty as an important part of feeling good and looking good. Mm-hmm. And so I think the more broad definition is exciting. And I think that being in this cocooning moment is a real opportunity for the marketplace to think about how best do we serve all these people who just want to take that next step. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how do we help them? Because it can feel really overwhelming. But what's the right next move? And I think that's where you can marry the technology and face-to-face to ultimately really help people become healthier.
Yeah. I think about how, you know, 6 months ago, we were all trying to figure out where we came from with all our self-testing, right? DNA testing. And now we're trying to figure out how we get there, right? So it's amazing how that the tools were in place. And now, you know, we move from pregnancy tests to COVID-19 tests or whatever that kind of looks like. Do you see, are there categories that, as you're talking and observing now, that you think will emerge as new types of businesses beyond what we already know?
Well, I don't know what they are yet. I think the answer has to be yes. I mean, the things that are interesting to me are this question of how much of us want just to go back to normal, and where are those places that we will? You and I have talked about hair salons. You know, it's actually top on my list to get back to my hair salon.
Right.
And many people, of course, will be doing more in home. But I do think there are some places that we just want to return to. But I think there are new categories now that maybe we just didn't have the time or energy or interest to think about. So I find, for example, this whole world where we're all cocooning in our homes is making me think about my home so much differently. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what emerges in the world of home care and that's interesting to me. You know, the interesting stat that pet shelters are empty now because mm-hmm. people want to have animals with them makes a lot of sense, because I worry about loneliness. So, you know, the pet business is doing phenomenally well, but what more does that spawn? Is that just a moment in time, or is that a forever thing? I think that's interesting question.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing as you say that, because I think about home. You know, obviously you have the Home Depot experience, but I think about working from home and companies that were very loath to let their employees work virtually. We were, for a number of reasons. In our company, we have a lot of virtual working. We have a lot of young families, babies, whatever. So it wasn't so foreign for us to end up so sort of officially shutting the door and saying work from home, because most of us already did. But I think about that and that changing dynamic. And if that becomes something that companies decide actually helps productivity or saves on real estate, rent or something, whatever it is. So that seems to me another area, to your point about talking about how we think about where we live, but also how we think about how we work.
Yeah, and that's something I heard loud and clear from this group of CEOs I was with, and there were over 100 of them. And one of the questions we were asking each other was, what are some of the silver linings from all of this? And one that we heard loud and clear was working from home, that it had gone more smoothly than anyone expected. It created opportunities to save real estate, but it also created opportunities for employees to feel more whole, because they're saving on their commute time. And so I don't think anyone knows yet exactly, but I would find it very hard to imagine that there won't be a lot more working from home when all of this comes together, when we're feeling safe again.
Yeah. You made a comment I just want to go back to before I talk to you about leadership, because I know that's very close to your heart. And you have a great reputation in many places that used to be as being a wonderful leader. You know, the luxury business, you know, is this an equal opportunity crisis in the sense that there are people still with money and the stock market is weird? I know nothing about it. It's just weird. But that notion, you've come out of the luxury business versus the essentials business, I'm going to call health and home. Is there something else there that a question we need to be asking about the luxury shopper? Is it, you talked about apparel, you talked about...
I don't have data on this, but gosh, look what we all have done without for 2 months. Mm. And I think this question of how much is enough, even if I have the means, how many things do I really need in my closet? And yes, I'm excited to get out of my sweatpants eventually, but I do think, and there'll be some guilty shopping, but I think it's going to be hard to imagine that luxury comes back quickly, even if the stock market comes back. And that's an industry, you know, when I was at CVS, weather and things like the flu were big drivers of our business. In luxury, the stock market is almost the perfect correlator to the business. But I do think that there will be fundamental rethinks coming out of this. And that's where that actually presents opportunity, right? So, you know, if Saks emerges as an even stronger player and the vendors start to think differently about the supply chain and you know, just how the whole business model works, I think that they can all do phenomenally well. But I don't think this is something that snaps back in a few months.
Yeah. Okay. So leadership, you know, boy, if we ever require leadership in these times, right? How do we need to lead now as executives at any level? How do we need to think about leading, and what are the questions we need to ask ourselves?
Yeah, so I have talked before, and you and I have talked about this leadership philosophy that I've always lived by, which is called interactive leadership. And I think that the times are requiring more of it. I'm seeing amazing examples of it from people that I watch very closely. But for example, one of the qualities of that leadership is paradox and complexity. That when you hold on to paradox and complexity, which is really about competing emotions, you can unlock more creativity. And I think people are feeling tremendous paradox and complexity right now. And in many ways, our frontline workers and people who are lower in the organization are feeling more worried and stressed. The financial strains, the home strains are really intense. So I think as leaders, reminding ourselves there's the both and. What are people worried about and what are they maybe excited about or proud of? And allowing people the room to express the emotions, but also watching their leaders convey their own sense of feeling. You know, we always think that for some reason you can't talk about your feelings at work. I think that leaders who do talk about their feelings have always been more effective, but now we need that even more than we ever did. So that's just one example where the thing that was always true is now even more true. I think another element of that is this notion of pride and purpose, you know, and what I hear from lots of CEOs is, wow, their folks, the teams feel so proud. You know, yes, it's hard and there have been furloughs and many tough, tough things. But the idea that people have been able to just persevere and that their purpose in many cases is more important than ever is a very empowering notion. So holding on to that, I think through all of this, the need for communication is just so intense. So one of the fun things for me about being at home is I'm with my 20-something children and just watching the communication they get from their companies. And how important it is when we're stuck in our homes to be hearing from leaders more regularly and giving a sense for, again, what they're both confident about, what they're worried about, but also where the world is going from their perspective. So lots of, I have to say, I think it's an incredible time to be a leader of an organization because you have a lot of pressure on you when you're running your company. But there are very important and wonderful things that can happen through all this.
It's so interesting you say that. We did a webinar 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was really the first time that we'd done anything from home. And I have to tell you, I was quite emotional. We were here sitting in my house, and I sort of welcomed. I realized I had to, you know, so I said to people, welcome to my home. The moment I did that, it was like, oh, I do it now, and I feel myself welling up. And I jumped into the, you know, the presentation and went through it. And at the end, why did I do this? I'm always looking for the perfect quote to end things. And I used the quote from Dickens, A Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Oh, my. And all of a sudden, I had to stop like I almost do now. And I said to everybody, you know, on the webinar, I had to sort of compose myself. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm getting quite weepy. And then I took a breath and ended things up. I can't tell you how many people sent me notes just to say, you know, we had, I don't know how many hundreds of people on it, but sent me notes to say, thank you for expressing the emotion. And I felt kind of soppy and silly, but it was like, that's what we're all feeling. And, you know, to hear somebody say that, I said, yeah, I got to look for a happier quote next time. I don't know what it is, but, you know, whatever. But yeah, that's an interesting leadership. It wasn't intentional on my part, but it's
so really, powerful. Yeah, it really is. And we're all human, and we're all worrying about our families, friends, and, you know, and if you can really acknowledge that, it frees people up to be with you.
So, Helena, as we've talked about, you know, communication and the relationship within companies, it also seems incredibly important to think about the way we create appropriate messages to our shoppers, to our customers, and the empathy that we show them in our marketing messages and advertising. What are your thoughts on how we do that?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. And obviously, I think great brands are really built by emotion rather than hard facts. And that's always been true. And so this will be more true even now. The thing that I would say, and I've had conversations with a few CEOs about this, is I think, though, it's really important to be authentically true to your own brand. So if you're a brand that has typically been, you know, somewhat hard-nosed or low-key or, you know, whatever it is that's true for you, to suddenly become completely, you know, heart-driven, lovey-dovey will feel really unauthentic. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I've had conversations with CEOs about what are other ways to convey the messages about all the great things that you're doing that might feel more true to people. And maybe they don't need to be said by you. Maybe there are other people talking about the great work that you're doing. So I think and for other brands, it's a much easier transition. I watch that happening already as I'm watching TV. Great brands are very smartly talking about their own pride for their frontline employees. Mm-hmm. And again, that's what we want to feel as consumers. So yes, I think that all of these things as leaders, we think about how do our own employees feel, and then how do we translate to our brand?
Yeah. And it's interesting in that it's not, you're right, it's not necessarily the sort of hard sell that says, you know, whatever. I'm writing, obviously not writing advertising copy. But it is relevance, right? You know, I do think a lot about, you know, the hair color companies for, you know, there's a category that's gone off the charts, right? The hair color companies who had the whimsy even to talk about hair color. And, you know, what are you going to do about your roots kind of thing? And here are some solutions with sort of the gentle nod to the fact that now what do we do? And so it was more about friends to friends, recognizing a situation, yes, selling a product, but doing it within the context of the moment and the emotion of the moment. And it's okay to worry about your hair color, even though we're worried about, you know, our immunity in other ways. So I think that was the other thing that really struck me about sort of authentic messaging and not having to sort of pretend to be something you're not.
Yeah, that's a good example.
Yeah. So as we wrap up here, I always say at the end of these, so here's the thing, you know, this sort of yin and yang, right? This extraordinary, dynamic and powerful and painful time we're living in. But you've laid out some questions that we need to think about. You know, you've talked about new ways of thinking about building trust and how do we do that. You talked about, interestingly, technology and will it stick and where will it stick? Populism, you know, and that notion around how do we think about healthcare around the country? The speed of innovation, which you're absolutely right, remarkable what we're starting to see out there. And just all of those the silver linings that, you know, if we step back for a minute, if we have the luxury to step back for a minute. Is there anything else that we haven't thought about or talked about or a message into the ether that, you know, we you and I should go off as if we were, you know, well, arms around each other?
You know, one of the things that happened to me 1 month into being CEO of Hudson's Bay was we had a very big data breach. And obviously now in comparison, it feels like a small problem. But at the time, it was really overwhelming. And what I learned from that experience was that people really rise in a crisis. And you can change a culture much faster in a crisis than you ever can in a good time. And I came from a company at CVS, which had a very strong culture, which I didn't really appreciate, quite frankly, until I left, how strong it was. But I went to one at Hudson's Bay where people were starving for leadership and direction and customer focus. And we came out of that relatively small crisis, much more customer focused, much more together as a team, and much more focused on how we would win in the marketplace. And so as hard as all of this is right now, I do think great things will emerge from all of it. And so reminding ourselves of that, that silver lining, that good will come of all of this. I've always been a believer of that. And it's hard in the moment. I probably have more perspective on it because I am more on the sidelines than I was 2 months ago. But it gives me a great sense of optimism, the fact that cultures can change so quickly and how important great leaders are.
Yeah, well, we know you're not going to be on the sidelines for very long because, you know, the brilliance exudes. And I am so glad that you were able to do this today. This is, first of all, I'm just so happy to see you. Those of you who are listening don't know I can see you, but I can. And I wish I could give you a big hug and buy you breakfast or you buy me a cocktail or all of us, all of the above. So here's the thing. To quote the very famous author, Charles Dickens, in his book, A Tale of Two Cities, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom, it was the age of foolishness. When I think about that quote, that is, on the one hand, I want to weep, and I have. On the other, I think about the wisdom, and I think about the ability of the worst of times bringing us to the best of times. They're the sorts of things that I think we can all think about today as our sort of beacon through this morass. Be well. Remember there are best of times to come. And remember wisdom will also always win over foolishness, although it's good to be foolish sometimes, so that's all right too. But wisdom will be there and the opportunities will grow. Thank you all. Thank you, Helena. Be well. I will see you all soon. Next time. Just a reminder, the content of this podcast is the product of WSL Strategic Retail. You can't reproduce it or repurpose it without asking us, without written consent. So don't forget that. Copyright WSL Marketing Inc. 2020. Thanks for listening. Really enjoyed the chat. Please join us next time. See you around.